The Paradox of Systemic Reform. I have provided the outlines not only of a viable international financial system, but also of a viable economic policy for the United States. It is no more than a sketch or a vision, but it could be elaborated to cover other aspects that I have not touched upon here. Two fundamental problems present themselves. One is abstract, and the other is personal. The abstract problem concerns all attempts at systemic reform. Given our inherently imperfect understanding, isn't there a paradox in systemic reform? How can we hope to design an internally consistent system? The personal problem concerns my aversion to bureaucracy. An international central bank would make bureaucracy inescapable. I believe the paradox of systemic reform is spurious, but it needs to be dealt with. Only if one could demand permanent and perfect solutions would it have any validity. But it follows from our imperfect understanding that permanent and perfect solutions are beyond our reach. Life is temporary. Only death is permanent. It makes a great deal of difference how we live our lives. Temporary solutions are much better than none at all. There is a great temptation to insist on a permanent solution. To understand its source, we must consider the meaning of life and death. The fear of death is one of the most deeply felt human emotions. We find the idea of death totally unacceptable, and we grasp at any straw to escape it. The striving for permanence and perfection is just one of the ways in which we seek to escape death. It happens to be a deception. Far from escaping the idea of death, we embrace it. Permanence and perfection are death. I have thought about the meaning of life and death long and hard, and I have come up with a formulation that I have found personally satisfying. I shall sum it up here, although I realize that it may not be as meaningful to others as it is to me. The key is to distinguish between the fact of death and the idea of death. The fact of death is linked with the fact of life, whereas the idea of death stands in juxtaposition with the idea of consciousness. Consciousness and death are irreconcilable, but life and death are not. In other words, the fact of death need not be as terrifying as the idea. The idea of death is overpowering. In terms of death, life and everything connected with it lose all significance. But the idea of death is only an idea, and the correspondence between facts and ideas is less than perfect. It would be a mistake to equate the idea and the fact. As far as facts are concerned, the clear and present fact is that we are alive. Death as a fact looms in the distance, but when we reach it, it will not be the same as the idea we have of it now. In other words, our fear of death is unlikely to be validated by the event. In thinking about life and death, we have a choice. We can take life or death as our starting point. The two are not mutually exclusive. Both need to be dealt with, as a fact and as a thought. But the point of view we adopt tends to favor one or the other. The bias we develop permeates all aspects of our thinking and existence. There are civilizations, like that of the Egyptians, that seem to be devoted to the cult of death. There are others, like that of the Greeks, where even the immortals seem to lead normal lives. In most instances, the two points of view are at odds, and the interplay between them makes history. The conflict between the spiritual and the temporal in Christianity is a case in point. The clash of biases can manifest itself in many more subtle ways. Thus, we can take different attitudes with regard to economic regulation. One position is that regulation is useless because it introduces distortions that, left to themselves, eventually lead to a breakdown of the system. This point of view is powerfully reinforced by the argument that the market mechanism, left to itself, tends toward equilibrium. The opposite point of view is that perfection is not attainable either by the market or by regulation. Markets are too unstable, regulation too rigid. Markets need to be regulated, but regulation cannot be left to itself either. It is in constant need of revision. The fact that no system is perfect is not a valid argument against trying to perfect the system. Take Bretton Woods. The fact that it eventually broke down does not alter the fact that it provided the basis for a quarter of a century of prosperity. When it comes to a choice between the two attitudes, mine is clearly in favor of life and the temporary and imperfect structures we can create within it. Although I advocate a comprehensive reform of the financial system, I have no illusions that the new system will be any more flawless or permanent than the preceding ones. On the contrary, I regard the search for permanence and perfection as an illusion. The pitfall in a well-functioning system is that it lulls us into complacency. That is what happened to Bretton Woods, and that is what will happen to the next one if we design it too well. This brings me to the personal problem I have with systemic reform. Systems are operated by bureaucrats, and I have an instinctive aversion to the bureaucratic mentality. In advocating a more regulated international financial system, I seem to be wishing for something that I abhor. The problem is real. The distinctive feature of every bureaucracy is its striving for self-perpetuation. Every system faces the danger that it becomes ossified in the hands of the bureaucracy that administers it. This holds true for Christianity as well as communism. The dead hand of the bureaucracy is difficult to escape. Mao Zedong tried it by instigating the Cultural Revolution, and the consequences were disastrous. But the problem is not insurmountable. When bureaucrats are in charge of a market, market action serves to keep the bureaucrats on their toes. Experience shows that central banks are among the most flexible, innovative, and efficient institutions. The reason is that the market provides a criterion by which the results of their actions can be judged. They may come under the influence of false ideologies, just like anybody else, but when a policy does not work, they cannot help but notice it. For instance, the Federal Reserve adopted a monetarist stance in 1979, but abandoned it in August 1982. Similarly, the IMF operated with a rather rigid set of prescriptions in dealing with heavily indebted countries, but gradually it has been forced to abandon a formula that does not work. Central banks are often criticized for following the wrong policies, but the very fact that the failures can be demonstrated provides a potent discipline. Moreover, central banks have been surprisingly innovative in handling crises. The Bank of England invented the lifeboat in 1974, and the Federal Reserve applied it on a worldwide scale in the debt crisis of 1982. Volcker, in particular, proved to be a man who thrives on crises. But the fact that a man like Volcker could be at the helm of a central bank cannot be treated as an accident. In sum, the creation of an international central bank does not constitute a permanent solution. Indeed, the very idea that it constitutes a permanent solution carries with it the seeds of the next crisis.